news you can depend on is on News Radio 830 WCCO.
It is now 8:33 here at WCCO. Welcome. You're listening to Steele Talking on a Friday night. I'm your host, Geralyn Steele. If you like what you hear, join me on Sunday nights from 7 to 11 p.m. where we talk about anything we want, honey. Join us.
Honey, honey, I can see the stars all the way from here. Can't you see the glow on the window pane? I can feel
the sun. As promised, we have our guest, Wendy Kramer, is joining us from Donor Sibling Registry. How you doing, Wendy?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. I hope it's as gorgeous where you are as it is here.
It is.
It's just fabulous, isn't it? Thank God for the summer.
No kidding.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about tonight. And you know, I was very curious with this being the big wedding season. I've been seeing all these weddings on television. Everybody's talking about them and trying to figure out what they're doing for brides and grooms. And I started thinking about a subject I talked about 4 years ago. And this was this whole thing about sibling registry and how, you know, the sperm banks and these men were fathering children they didn't know anything about. And then I read the story from last year of 150. A father comes up and there are 150 children that say, hey, you're my dad.
Well, actually, that group is closing in on 200 now.
Seriously?
I'm serious, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, Wendy. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Immediately when I thought about this 4 years ago, I thought this is going to be a real problem. Has this been considered from the very beginning? Is this something that the sperm banks really thought about?
No, that's the problem. Nobody really thought about it. Until we came along, nobody had any idea how many kids were born to any one donor. They just would sell the sperm and not keep track and have no idea which kids were born from which donors. And then when the donor sibling registry came along and we started connecting families, so families started to get an idea of actually how many there were for each donor, we were shocked, the public was shocked, the industry is shocked, everybody's shocked. But it didn't, you know, you'd think that that would make the industry stand at attention and take some action and pull in the reins and start accurate record keeping, and none of that has happened.
None of that has happened, and you've been around for how long now?
12 years.
What?
No, it's very, very frustrating for those of us in donor families that there's just no accountability, there's no responsibility, there's no oversight, there's no regulation, nobody's watching. That's the problem.
So where do we go from here? Because the bottom line is that this is not just in America. A lot of people think when we're talking about sperm banks, we're talking about America. We're talking about across the world.
Absolutely. And a lot of these big U.S. sperm banks ship to many countries around the world, you know, 50, 60, 70 countries. So if you're, you know, like my son came from a big sperm bank in California, he could have half brothers and sisters in, you know, 50 countries around the world, and he'll never know it.
And he'll never know it. And of course, our children are now global citizens. They are traveling all over the world. They're learning other languages. They are learning the world. And so they could meet someone while on a school trip, college trip in China, and meet someone, fall in love, and it could be their half brother or sister.
Well, they can meet someone at the playground, at a school function, on a Disney cruise. We hear about these all the time. Random meetings all the time.
Okay, so there's this term that I read called accidental incest. Is this something real?
Well, I don't know of any cases, but what I do know is that I hear, like I say, all the time of accidental meetings amongst mothers with the children. So if it's going to happen when these kids are children, you have to think it's going to happen when they're adolescents, when they're teenagers, and when they're adults as well.
Yeah, so, but how does that conversation come up on the cruise? Hi, this is my son. His father was, you know, number N1278.
Well, you know, what I told my son always was, you know, when you get old enough to date, if you're dating a girl, you need to make sure she's not donor conceived. And if she is, you have to ask her what her donor number is.
Oh, perfect. So that segues right into what is it that you do. Donor sibling registry is pretty huge, and people are really learning about it and logging into it. Tell us a little bit.
Yeah. Well, my son was donor conceived. I was married. My ex-husband and I had infertility issues. And so my son is a donor conceived person. And he always wondered, you know, where do I come from? Who's my genetic father? What's my ancestry? What's my medical background? And he was always very, very curious, just not unlike adoption, mm-hmm. where people, you know, you have your mom and your dad, you have your family, but it doesn't negate the desire to know where you come from. And so when he was about 9, we figured out from the sperm bank that there were indeed half-brothers and sisters out there, people born from his same sperm donor. And my son said, okay, you know, maybe my donor signed up to be anonymous, but what about my half-brothers and sisters? What if we want to all meet each other, but the sperm bank won't help us connect? How are we going to know that we'd like to meet each other? Even my donor, what if he was willing to meet me? I would never know it. He would never know it. So we created the Donor Sibling Registry, and it's a website. It's a nonprofit organization where people can come and post their information. It's all mutual consent contact, so if you don't want to be found, you don't come to the website. But for those who do want to connect with half-brothers and sisters, donors with kids, and kids with their biological mothers or fathers, we have egg donors and sperm donors, we made a place where it's possible for these people to come and connect with each other.
Okay, so now this is where you can come and connect. Let's go back a little bit, though. You told your son when he was 9 years old, you know, that if you wanted
actually,
to...
Well, actually, yeah, he was 2 years old. My ex and I had split at that point for a year already, and my son at 2.5 came to me and said, so did my dad die or what?
Oh, wow.
And that's when we had the conversation.
So you decided to tell him. I'm sure that there are many parents who may not ever tell the children.
Well, that's very problematic for the reasons we were just talking about. You know, one should know that their donor conceived.
Right.
But also we deal with and counsel so many donor-conceived people who find out later on by mistake that they were lied to, and it's devastating. They feel a sense of betrayal, their identity is pulled out from under them, as opposed to people like my son, who was told, you know, at 2 years old. So when people say to him, wow, what was it like when you found out you were donor conceived? He looks at them like they're crazy, and he says, I don't know, what was it like when you found out you had blonde hair?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, what? Is this a part of who I am and who, you know? But when you find out when you're, you know, 13 or 18 or 30 or 50, your whole world turns upside down.
Well, you remember back in the 70s when we learned about children that were being conceived in a Petri dish. Can you imagine the questions they get asked?
Oh, yeah.
If that's what your son
yeah.
is being asked, my
Definitely.
Gosh.
Like, we're huge proponents of openness, honesty. We know as a society that family secrets are toxic. Nobody benefits from them. Even when the secret is quote-unquote kept, there's dysfunction in the family. There's, you know, it's hard work to keep a secret.
But that's the challenge. That's the challenge is transparency across the board. Because when
exactly.
it comes to sperm bank, that's the whole thing. You don't want any transparency. You want to be able to go in, do your thing, keep it secret, and you forget about it.
Well, that's the whole thing, too, is that these donors are college kids. There's nobody adequately counseling and educated them to say, whoa, whoa, wait a minute here. This is not just about one day and a transaction with a sperm bank for some beer money. This is a decision that could affect you and your future family for the rest of your lives. You know, and they might be promising you no more than 10 kids, but come check out the Donor Sibling Registry. You could end up with 30 kids, 50 kids, 100 kids that all might want to know who you are. So that's not a decision to be taken lightly to be a sperm donor, and I think none of these donors, you know, they're 20-year-old kids. Nobody's adequately counseling them and educating them on what it really means to do this.
Okay, so you've talked about the parents of donor children telling their children, you are a child of you know, a product of a sperm bank. You are a donor child. What about those who have supplied the sperm bank, the donors themselves, the people, the men who walk in and get it done?
Yes.
Should they also, when they get married, should they tell their wives, their future wives, should they tell the children that they have with their wife? And he should say, you know what, I was a sperm donor, and we should look and make sure, you know, that
Absolutely.
let our children know that they may have half siblings out
hey,
there.
Hey, we have some sperm donors register on our website with their children because their children are saying, hey, if I have half brothers and sisters out there, I want to know who they are.
Oh, wow.
So their kids are curious, too.
That's got to be few and far between, though.
It's a few, definitely. But, I mean, I just heard from a sperm donor today who's in a bit of a panic because his, you know, he kept it as a secret. This is when the trouble comes, when you keep the secrets and then the secrets get out.
Yeah.
And his wife and his kids are not very happy that he, number one, was a sperm donor, number two, never told them, and number three, now has children out there that want to know him.
That want to know him. And where how does that process begin? Is that something that you, do you put the children in contact with those fathers, and the fathers can privately say, no, thank you, I have no interest in knowing them?
Well, again, our site is mutual consent contact only, so okay. The donors that are not ready for contact or don't want contact, they just don't come to our website.
Do you know how many children are going to be on somebody's couch crying to a therapist saying, I just don't know how to handle this?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's how serious this is.
Absolutely. And how does a guy, you know, what if he feels an ethical and moral need to connect with these donor-conceived children?
Or to take care of them.
Well, or he has a medical condition that he feels it's really important that they know about. And his wife is on the other side saying, you don't even have time for our kids. How are you going to make time for those seven? Or
exactly.
Those
or those 150
and
or 200.
Poor guy, you know, you can kind of feel for everybody. You feel for the wife. You feel for the donor. But you feel for the donor-conceived children. They didn't have any choice in this matter. They didn't make a decision about any of this. But here they are in that situation. So from my perspective, it's the rights of the children that should be looked at first.
I understand that, but at the same time, I mean, we're talking 12 years later. You've been around 12 years. We understand the seriousness of this challenge, this problem, yet nothing is being done.
Right.
Who's dropping the ball? Who is it that doesn't understand how important this is?
The very industry that's doing it.
The banks themselves.
The sperm banks themselves, right. You know, and they claim, oh, we self-regulate. No, you don't.
No, they don't. In fact, I just read an article that came out last month that talked about one of those sperm banks in California who one of the children called in and said, look, I want to know my father. I need the number. Can you pull up my file? And, of course, they said it was buried in some basement somewhere.
Absolutely.
Or it's very difficult to get. We'll get back to you. And they never do.
That just happened to us.
That's insane.
Didn't even have a complete file on us. And, you know, you'd think maybe the people that started the donor sibling registry, you might want to, you know, work a little bit harder on that file.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, now we're going to have to take a break, Wendy. But when we come back, I want to talk to you then about regulation, because maybe this is the time for this industry to really start looking at being more regulated. Maybe the government needs to get more involved because this is mounting. And the more these sperm banks stay open, and we're not having a problem with donors, it looks like. There's plenty of donors to go around. We really have to do something to stop this. So we're going to take a break. My guest, Wendy Kramer is joining us from Donor Sibling Registry. If you want more information, just go to DonorSiblingRegistry.com. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 8:49 here at WCCO. You're listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Gerilyn Steele. You know, every time I look into my son's eyes, Jonathan, he was born very fair-skinned, and both his father and I are medium brown. And he's fair-skinned. He has greenish-blue eyes that change colors, and my mother's brothers were very fair-skinned. But when we saw a picture of my ex-husband's grandfather, my son looks just like him. I mean, these genes reach way back.
Oh,
and,
yes.
You know, we can see it because we know the history. We
right.
know the family tree. But can you imagine for those children who don't, you know, who are born from these donors and they just don't know. They have no clue when they look in the mirror who's looking back at them. Well, joining me is Wendy Kramer, finishing out this hour. She's from the Donor Sibling Registry. And again, just go to DonorSiblingRegistry.com if you're interested and have some questions or you want to know how to get started if you know someone or you yourself are going through this very thing. All right, Wendy, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, let's jump right in on this regulating this whole industry. Do you think we need more regulation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There needs to be somebody watching. That's the problem, is that there's no oversight as far as genetic and medical testing of donors.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, I'm sure you've read about this too. There are groups of siblings with some of them with very serious
very
diseases.
Serious.
You know,
absolutely.
The one in the news the last month was just a baby with cystic fibrosis.
I read that story.
Well, there's no excuse for that. In this day and age, absolutely, positively, they should be testing everyone for cystic fibrosis, and they're not.
And the problem was that they were testing the donors, but they weren't testing the sperm. They weren't going deeper into the DNA.
Well, sometimes they were, but sometimes they were not, and they can lie about it, too. And each sperm bank can test for some donors for some diseases. They can say whatever they want. The bottom line is nobody's looking. So they can pretty much do, except for the FDA does monitor STDs and HIV and a small handful of things.
Not enough.
That is monitored by the FDA, but not most genetic diseases and medical issues and things that we see in droves on the donor sibling registry.
You know, we keep up with dogs, the breeding of dogs and horses, better than we do with children. I don't get it.
Well, do you know that the artificial insemination records on cattle are perfectly kept records? There are no records on donor-conceived children, on human beings. So we have better records on artificial insemination with cattle than we do with human beings.
Oh, my gosh. You should put that on a T-shirt and put your logo on it. Seriously. I mean, it's shocking. It's shocking to hear that. That's a shocking statistic.
Well, and it's like shame on the industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're big, they're mighty, they're powerful. They have lobbyists in Washington. And, you know, who are we? We're a little charity organization helping families. So against them, you know, I don't know what we can do, but the voice that we have, and I appreciate you having me on tonight, the way that we can get it out there is through the media. Because if we keep telling the stories, it's basically, you know, publicly shaming the industry enough to where, you know, maybe they'll be forced into making changes.
Maybe so. Okay, if you had your best figure you could throw out there about how many donor children you think there are across the world, what would that figure look like?
That's the problem. Nobody knows, and there's this number that people throw around of 30,000 a year, 60,000 a year. Those are made-up numbers, and mm-hmm. as long as people use those numbers, it gives everyone a false sense of security, like, oh, somebody's keeping track. Nobody's keeping track. Nobody has any idea. You know, we can guess that there's more than 2 million people on the planet right now mm-hmm. who are donor-conceived.
If you could turn back the hands of time, would you have done it?
Well, that's really tricky, and I think that's why I'm in a good position. It's because I can walk both sides of the line here. I know what it's like to be in a marriage and told by a doctor you will never have children with your husband, and to want to be a mother so badly. You know, all of us that are mothers, we know how driven we were to become mothers. So I know what that felt like, that deep desire. I knew I was meant to be a mother, yet here I was in that position. So without donor conception, I wouldn't have my kid. So can I say it's wrong? No, because I have, you know, I wouldn't trade my son for anything in the world. But knowing what I know now, can I say, is there a way to do it better and more ethically and more responsibly? Absolutely.
I tell you, this has opened up a whole floodgate. And as I said, this came to mind for me tonight when I started hearing about weddings and seeing weddings all over town. The big limos are out, the beautiful wedding dresses. And it reminded me of that conversation I had about 4 years ago and wondered, where are they at today? And here you are telling me it's no better today than 4 years ago, 12 years ago, 20 years ago. Amazing.
Yes.
All right. It's been a pleasure having you on, Wendy. And right before I let you go, you got to tell me, we have the same amount of donors, or do we have more donors today than we used to have?
That's also an unknown because, you know, there isn't a central tracking registry.
So there's no one putting out a number saying, you know, our clinic this year did this many or, you know. Nothing like that.
Well, the problem is, and we know this through research, is that between 22 and 27% of all sperm donors donate at more than one clinic. So that complicates things even more.
Right, so there are even two numbers for the same person.
Oh, my God.
Oh, come on.
We have a donor on our website who donated at 17 different clinics.
And that's 17 different numbers.
Right.
Unbelievable. What
a
web.
Talk about a mess.
That's a mess, girl. Let me tell you, my daughter and my son, I'm going to have to call them up and say, you know. In fact, my daughter got married a year and a half ago. First thing I asked her, did you get a blood test? Thank you so much. You take care of yourself.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.
That was Wendy Kramer from Donor Sibling Registry.